Welcome to show 23 of the Mises UK podcast with me, your regular host, Andy Duncan. Tonight I'm speaking with my very good friend Helio Beltrão, the founder and president of Instituto Mises Brazil. Given the recent 200-year celebration of the birth of that totalitarian monster, Karl Marx, we'll be talking a little bit about that, but mostly about the amazing success that Helio's had spreading the ideas of Mises within Brazil, and also with his many translations of great Austrian works into Portuguese within the rest of the Portuguese-speaking world. Olá, Helio!
Oi, Andy! Como você está?
Desculpe para meu português terrível, mas você está bem?
Eu estou muito bem e o seu português está sensacional.
Fantástico, obrigado, meu amigo. Agora eu preciso falar em inglês antes de posso explodir. So, Senhor Beltrão, what's your personal reaction to the recent celebration by leftists of 200 years of the infamous Karl Marx?
Well, Andy, first of all, thank you very much for having me here. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm already a fan of Mises UK, and I'm sure you're going to be doing great stuff. So congratulations to you, Kier, and the team.
Thank you very much. That's great. So what do you think then of Karl Marx, 200 years of Karl Marx?
Okay. 200 years of disaster of this philosophy. And despite all that, despite all the failures, it sticks around, which is kind of disappointing. And, you know, I think Marx is probably the most successful intellectual in that sense, because despite all the failures, people still cling to the ideas, and the ideas don't seem to work. They seem to be unjust. And it's a shame that we still talk about this guy, the bearded guy. And we have so much suffering in the world because of socialism ideas and communism. So I think when we talk about drug policy, I always mention that the worst drug is a socialist book. And I think that's what causes most damage in society. And we still have that after 200 years of his birth. So it's a shame. Also, Andy, it started the way I see Marxism, going back one step, is he had this methodological holism. As opposed to what we Austrians like to do, which is methodological individualism. Mm-hmm. And because of this, he saw, you know, the classes, the class struggle. And up to a point, he was certainly right, because he mentions the state privileged class against the rest of the people. And up to that point, it seemed okay. But then he goes to the bourgeois against the proletariat and other voluntary transactions. And I think he missed the voluntary issue to that. And of course, when he compounds the class struggle with the exploitation theory, in which the proletariat is supposed to create surplus value that the entrepreneur is obtaining unjustly from him, then he will create this whole hate vision between the classes. And I think this is all wrong. Of course, the Austrians over time debunked his whole theory, but still it clings. And now it's morphed into different class struggles. So we see today, while before was the bourgeois against the proletariat, now we have feminism. So it's men against women. You have all this equal wages independently of the productivity, and you have affirmative action, and then you have gender ideology. So the you know, a newborn is supposed to decide which gender he is. So it's completely crazy, and it's all based on Marxist ideas. And then you have victimization all around, and non-discrimination, and postmodernism. So you all of these branches that derived from this vision of victimism and hate and envy and things like that. So it's a shame.
Yeah, I know. It's I mean, a lot of it's come from the envy and a lot of the human vices, a lot of the human kind of problems that we have with wanting what other people have. But Mises does show us, of course, in Human Action, why socialism always fails. But I'd like to ask you a few questions from some of our listeners. And we have one from Raphael Liao, which I think is Lion. And he asks you, I mean, we've had 200 years of socialism. I mean, the Black Death was probably 300 years, so we've probably got another 100 years to go. How can movements like Mises Brazil and Mises UK then help stop cultural Marxism, particularly at universities?
Yeah, I think the most important thing, and then we have to thank the Mises Institute in the US, is first of all to be able to use this utopic idea of liberty and translate it like an ivory tower so that we can show like a vision of our utopia, like the Marxists do on the other side. So we have to counterbalance that. And because we have the example of the Mises Institute that was so successful for 35 years of being an ivory tower, we can mimic that. And that's what we have been doing in Brazil as well. So as long as you cling to that utopia, you will get the youth energized because you seem consistent, you seem passionate about it, and not seem, only seem, we are, of course. And because of this, you gather all these young people around the movement, and we can work bottom up, because we've tried, you know, over the decades to try to do it top down, and it hasn't worked. And the way to do it is bottom up. And then when you capture the minds of the young people and people that are going to universities now, they will start demanding that we get invited first for lectures. Then they ask for a course, elective course. Then they are kind of obliged to put on a full regular course at the university, and you go from there. And of course, you need the students also to establish study groups. So in Brazil, we have about 150 study groups, completely independently organized study groups. Of course, we help them by sending books and sometimes sending speakers, but they have the initiative, and they are over there at the floor of the university having to debate and confront the crazy leftists that try to shut them down and shut them up. And we've been successful because people are passionate about it. And they, once they've learned from Mises, Hayek, Rothbard, they become really energized and they start moving. And that's how we are now starting to make a change at the university level in Brazil.
That's brilliant. Now, I was hoping as well that you could help us out with the development of Mises UK. So before you got involved with Mises and Mises Brazil, what made you want to decide to get involved with spreading the word of Mises?
Well, I'm no academic. I'm not an economist. So I used to work with finance, completely unrelated to all of this, and used to work for the largest investment bank in Brazil. And back in 97, 98, we had, you know, the Asian and the Russian crisis, and the bank I used to work for became basically illiquid or maybe insolvent at some point. And because of this, I lost most of my savings, and I had to learn what happened. I felt I had this huge ignorance that I was not aware of, and I started reading lots of different things. And then I ended up finding a book by Hayek at a bookstore in Rio, it was probably like 15 years old at that shelf over there. Yeah, it was like the yellowish pages.
Yeah.
But and then I saw the bibliography. I looked up Mises at Google, whatever, Alta Vista at the time. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then I found the Mises Institute, and then I read everything. And I became really interested in the Austrian business cycle theory. And I started using this as an investment thesis. And it worked wonders for me. So I was able, through my understanding of it and through the building of a control panel, I was able to exit by August 2007, before the beginning of the crisis. And I felt so much gratitude towards Mises and Rothbard and Hayek that I needed to do something. So it became sort of, in the beginning, I didn't feel as if it was a calling. It was just like an initiative out of gratitude that I needed to give this back to society. Whomever wanted to read about them, I was going to try to make it available. And then with time, I felt that this is my calling. That's what I want to be doing. This may change my country for the better, and we desperately need that. So that's how I became involved with these guys, our heroes.
That's great. So it's a sort of a payback to Mises and Hayek and so on. Now, I've always thought of Brazil as being quite a socialist country, almost a communist one. And I was a bit surprised last year when I was in Sao Paulo at your invitation, and I was with Yuri Maltsev, and we saw the Communist Manifesto being sold on the street. So regarding liberty and so on, is it getting better in Brazil? Is it getting noticeably better?
I think so. I have lots of friends like you that live abroad and who come every year or every 2 years to Brazil, and they every time they come back, they say, this is growing, this is changing. We have more people, we have more young people. There's something going on in Brazil. And at some point, I had doubts whether, it's because we've been using, the internet. Oh, maybe it's because we had this so bad leftist government by Dilma Rousseff. And then I realized that, you have internet in other countries and you have bad leftist governments in other countries. And here, this seems much more energetic and it's changing so much and it's growing so much. So there must be another explanation. And one of the possible explanations is that the ideas are starting to spread around, and we see that. We see anecdotal evidence all the time. For example, one of the most important reforms that was passed in Congress, the representative that was ahead of the initiative started his speech by citing Mises. So that's one of the anecdotal evidence we have. But I have tons of evidence of that sort. So definitely something is going on in Brazil. I would recommend Mises UK and all the other Mises Institutes to try to study the Brazilian case, because we are growing very fast. For example, when we started Mises Brazil, we have two think tanks in Brazil, and they were kind of not very active, except for the one in the south of Brazil that organizes the Liberty Forum, but very local initiative. And now, only at an initiative that I'm also part of, which is the Freedom Network, we have 32 think tanks.
That's crazy. A lot.
Yeah, I know. 32 all over Brazil. Some larger, some smaller. Some focus on activism, others focus on, like us, on academic stuff. Doesn't matter. They are all part of what I call the starfish, the Austrian libertarian starfish. And it when I spoke about this back in 2010 in the US, I remember you were there. It hadn't started at the time. It was just speculation that this was going to happen, and it definitely happened in Brazil.
I spoke at your conference last year in Sao Paulo, and I was just blown away by how many people were there in the auditorium. There were probably thousands, and probably I think every seat was filled. Now, in the UK, for maybe even the last 30 years, there's been usually about 100 of us in the entire libertarian movement. We could all fit in a room and we all fight like cats in a bag. So how many people now do you think are Misesians or libertarians in Brazil?
Hard to say. What I can say is that we have about 40,000 people daily that go to the site. We have 300,000 likes on Facebook, fans on Facebook. So it's pretty large. And the most interesting thing is that there are other institutes, think tanks, and people that were able to translate our message to a different audience, or in simpler terms, or to become activists. And these guys are growing very fast as well. For example, one of the main groups that were on the protests in 2015, before the impeachment, there were basically two large activism groups. One of them was sort of a neoliberal group. I wouldn't say they were much influenced by us, but indirectly, I would say yes. And the other group was definitely a libertarian group. And these guys were definitely very influenced by us and by other think tanks of our kind. And these two activist groups were the main, the main forces that culminated in the impeachment of the president.
That was an amazing day. I was cheering that day when that happened. Even I was watching it on the internet. So it was a great stuff. Now, I did want to dig into the success of Misesianism and libertarianism into Brazil and learn some lessons from you. You've probably answered this with a couple of answers already about the think tanks and so on, but I did have a second question from Fernando Monteiro d'Andrea. And he asks, what do you think the three main reasons are for the rise of Mises Brazil and general libertarianism? Do you have anything else beyond the growth of these think tanks?
Well, the main reasons behind our growth, I think first we need to disregard completely what other people say, that we're going to fail, that this is not worth it, and this is radical ideas would never be adopted in Brazil. So just the perseverance of just keeping the message, every day publish an article, every single day publish an article, and keep doing day after day after day. So I think that's the main thing. Therefore, you need stay in power. So you need very low fixed costs. So you don't need headquarters or stuff like that before you become large. So I think it's just, keep doing lectures, keep traveling around Brazil. When you get invited, try to go. And that's what I've always tried to do. And also people at the Institute as well. Make available the books, and we always made the books available for free, the electronic versions for free, and still we sold a lot of books. So people wanted the books, but they could just download them, and we had already more than 1 million downloads so far. So there are 1 million books around. Somebody must be reading them.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Now we're very lucky here with Mises Auburn, because they produce a lot of the books in English. So we don't need to do that in Mises UK, maybe in Mises Germany and so on. They can translate everything. Oh, no, they don't need to. Of course, Mises wrote everything in German anyway. Now, I did want to ask you another angle on this. Is there anything you've done along the way that didn't work that we should avoid doing ourselves in the future?
That's a good question. For one thing I did in the beginning, which I wanted to avoid now, is not engage the media. Probably because of prejudice. I say these guys will never like us. They don't want to be talking about our ideas. They are they're narrow-minded, and it's not entirely true. So if I had started talking to the mainstream media, which is not really mainstream in the sense that they don't want to talk about our ideas at all, maybe I would have more reach now. So these guys, they want news. They want things that are working, talk about that. They want to give space to different ideas. Maybe it's not that it's not easy because most of the journalists are Marxist or are Marx oriented, but it's not as bad as you would think. At least was not as bad as I thought at the beginning. So now definitely I'm talking to journalists and they run stories about what we're doing, about things that are good for us. So why not? So we shouldn't shy away from them.
Now, as a card-carrying Hopper Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist myself, I don't really follow or have much truck with politics. But as you're growing and as Mises Brazil has reached a kind of critical mass of thousands and thousands of people involved, 40,000 likes on Facebook and so on, do you have any plans to get into the snake pit of Brazilian politics?
Not Mises Brazil. Definitely not. I wrote the bylaws of Mises Brazil, and we are completely forbidden from having any involved with the state whatsoever.
Oh, good.
So Mises Brazil cannot do that. However, I mentioned to you before the Libertarian Network, and this network is one of the main purposes of the network is try to influence public policy without going into politics directly, but it can support a certain piece of legislation. It can support a platform for example, now that's what we're doing now, the privatization of the post office in Brazil. So far, we haven't supported any piece of legislation, but it's possible that in the future we will do that, like a proposed legislation. Yeah, I think the next step is definitely this. Have you heard about my analogy between the movement of ideas, the idea war and the soccer championship?
No. Do tell me more.
Okay. So I my analogy is that we are fighting like in a football championship, and we have the libertarian team. We're competing against the Marxists and the Keynesians and the Social Democrats and some other teams. And historically, we've been in, I don't know how you call it in English, in Series C, the third grade.
Well, we have a funny name. We used to call it the third division, but now I think we call it the championship or something.
Okay, so the third division. So we've always been in the third division. And how is the team structured? The goalkeeper is the main thinker of that doctrine from the past. So in our case would be Mises and then Marx at the other team and then Keynes and so forth.
Yeah.
The defense would be the academic people that are translating today at the universities, at academic journals, the ideas for the local society. And in that sense, we are not so well as in the goalkeeper, because in Brazil, at least, the Marxists dominate academia, as Fernando was asking the previous question. And I bet that it's not as bad as in Brazil in the UK, but probably you have a dominance of Keynesian and neoclassical ideas. Mm-hmm. Here is Marxism. So our defense is not so good. And then you have the midfield, which is the most important part of a football team. And it is formed by journalists and writers and comedians and playwriters and things like that. And so far, we haven't had a grab in Brazil of culture, which is the midfield. We're starting to have some good guys writing at newspapers and so forth. Some guys at the TV, but any leftist singer would, dribble around us and do his stuff and score many goals. So far, we don't have a good midfield. And then over there at the front, you have the striker, which is the politician, the guy who's waiting for the rest of the team to work around the ball and just give him the opportunity to score. It's integrated. And what we do, the think tanks are the, you know, the coaches and the training of the goalkeepers and the fields and et cetera, outside of the main field. And you have the, you know, the how do you call it? The fans. And now we have the most fans of all of them. And we have the best coaches also. So our team is starting to get better and it's winning a few matches. And we are now on the first division, finally, the last one of the first division. But so far we have gone up to first division. And my theory is that as we go up on the league table, what will happen is that the Messis and the Neymars of other teams at some point would want to play on our team, even though they are not from our doctrine. They will say that they were always libertarian. When they were a child, they used to sell books in school, whatever. They lemonade stands around. So they that's why they want to play on our team, because they want to play on the winning team and the team that has the most fans. So it's integrated. We cannot just be on the ivory tower, if you look as an integrated unit, and only play defense. That's not how it works. You have to impact culture, and eventually you need to score, because if you don't score, you won't have a smaller state or no state at all, because the other options are unfeasible. The other options would be revolution, and we don't believe in that. That's for the Marxists. You could think of something like establishing seasteading units, like Patrick Friedman. I think that's a little bit utopic. And the other one would be to try to hide behind technology and doing the Bitcoin, etc. And I think that's a little bit naive, because the state will find you physically and it can find your assets and you'll be at some place at some point. So it's unless you change the rules of the game, we're not going to win this stuff. And I know it's difficult. But that's the only way I envisioned so far. So we need to impact public policy. And for that, we need to score goals through the politicians at some point. It may be us. It may not be us. Because if we have changed the ideas in society, and especially in culture, the politicians will want to score the goals that we need, because they're out for votes. And if we have won the culture war, we have won the game.
I like your description there of politicians as just being fickle people who do anything to get on the right team. Now, speaking of politicians, I've got one final question from a listener, and this is from Maria Teresa Giotolle Mendez. And she asks, what do you think, Helio, about the upcoming October general election in Brazil, and how do you think it's going to go?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I know I am a speculator, but not so much. Anyway, I think it's not going to be this time that we'll have a libertarian president. However, it might be the first time that we have a team of representatives in Congress. The last time we had a libertarian congressman was back in the 80s. So we have 513 representatives in total, plus another 81 senators. And I think we might be able to get maybe 20, 25 libertarians at one shot, and maybe a few senators as well. So it's very exciting, because last year there was one libertarian representative that assumed office for 6 months because he was the second most voted, while the guy was out of his post. And at that short period, he was able to introduce the extinction of the compulsory union tax.
Whoa, brilliant. Well done for him.
Yes. And so if one guy for 6 months was able to do that, can you imagine 20 to 30 guys for 8 years or 4 years, whatever?
Okay, fingers crossed that works out, and that sounds brilliant. So things looking good for Brazil. Okay, let me try some more terrible Portuguese. Okay, Helio, obrigado para o seu tempo hoje à noite. Is there anything else going on at Mises Brazil that you'd like to promote now?
Oh my goodness, so much going on. We, the academic journal is doing really well. We are in the 10th edition so far. We are doing more conferences and summer schools and keep growing. So, well, anybody who wants to know more and knows Portuguese like you do can go to our site, mises.org.br, and also on Facebook, and then you can check all the news that's going on.
I think my best Portuguese thing ever I said was ontem vodka hoje água.
Yesterday vodka, today water. That's wonderful.
Okay, so are you coming to Bodrum this year?
I'm not sure, probably not, but I would love to go, but I don't think I can make it this year.
Oh, that's a shame. Oh, well, I hope to see you again anyway on one of your fantastic visits to London. So, ciao, Elio Beltrão.
Andy, thank you very much. It was a pleasure. Ciao, my friend.
We hope you enjoyed tonight's program with Elio Beltrão from Mises Brazil. If you'd like to help us out on the MisesUK.org podcast, please add the links to this program and any others that you like onto your favorite social media sites. And also, if you could, please write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That really would help us to become more visible there and would help us spread the word of Mises Rothbard and, of course, the great man himself, Hans Hermann Hoppe. We'll be back very soon with some of the great guests from the world of Austrian economics. Until then, please enjoy your property and freedom responsibly.